Shows family, Sister Abonim. Last week's parasha starts off Vayucha Yisoro. Meir Shana, the Esrim Shana, Meshev HaShoni. Rashi, the famous Rashi says that it's because he wanted to say that Meir Ben Kuf, Bas Kuf, Kabas Chof Lechait, Bas Chof, Kabas Zayin, Yofi. It's a very strange Rashi, Lechura. And we have to understand what Rashi wants to say, Alpi HaMedrash. I don't know if it fits in exactly in Rashi, but I think that pshat in the Rashi is that people have different perspectives in different times of life. And generally speaking, people do things in different times of life because they're convenient, they're easy, they come naturally, they have different wants and different needs. And so there are different people who have different ideas as they grow along. A person who's 70 years old wants different things than a person who's 20 years old. And a person who's 20 years old wants different things than a person who's 100 years old. And so the Torah wants to tell us that Sarah, her needs and her wants were all one. They didn't change from time because her needs and her wants were not something that was only convenient. It was something that she understood had to happen, and therefore she did things because it was something that was necessary, not because it was convenient. I knew Chaim for 60 years. He was my friend, my best friend. We went to school together, we learned yeshiva together. We did many, many things together for our whole lives. We separated sometimes, but we were always together. Together benefesh, but together with the love for each other. I want to ask Mechidah from the Tzibra, I usually don't speak very long, but 60 years takes a long time. Everything I'm going to say today, I know firsthand, except for maybe one or two things. And I lived together with Chaim for many, many, many years. We had a lot of very great experiences together. I just want to share some of them with you and to explain, and I think to see who Chaim Zev Malunowitz really was. As a Medrash in Shir Hashim, it says, "Ani kachomo nivne ol im chomo hi nivne ol tiras kesef im chomo hi ze Avram Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu imam itu dvorim kachomo nivne ol tiras kesef natzilenu v'nivne also ba'olam v'imdelesu notzer ol ruach eres." If Avraham Avinu was going to the Kivshon HaEsh, this is talking about the time when Avraham Avinu was thrown to Kivshon HaEsh, and by Nimrod, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, if you're a chomo, if you're like a wall, then I'll build a tiras kesef, I'll take you out of the Kivshon HaEsh. If you're like a delis, then not sure I'll come to luach eretz. Dalu b'mitzvi mitzvahs u'metal tel maso kidelis, not sure I'll come to luach eretz. And we have to understand, what is it talking about here? Avraham Avinu was willing to go into Kivshon HaEsh. He was willing to be Moser Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What kind of homo? What's the problem here? I mean, he's really willing to go to Kivshon HaEsh. What more can he possibly ask than someone who's willing to be Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem? And I think we can understand it by Gemara Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos says that sheker is something that only has standing on one leg. A shin is one leg, a kuf is one leg, a resh is one leg. Because a sheker is something that's convenient, something that's easy, it's something that comes naturally, it's something that a person wants to do because it happens to be something that's easy to do at this time. Emes stands on two legs, because emes is not something that's convenient. Emes is something that's true, that always exists, and it never changes in any way, and it doesn't make any difference how difficult it is. Emes is something that is always existent, and it always stays the same. And a person who wants to jump into Kivshon HaEsh, sometimes he does it because it's a fad, sometimes he does it because it may not be convenient, but it's something that he has all of a sudden, a spiritual high, and he does something that is above and beyond what he really feels. A person who's emes, a person who's like a choma, a person who's like a brick wall, he's someone who doesn't change and he does things exactly the way he always did. And I always looked at Chaim as a choma. I just want to say a few stories here about the different stages in Chaim's life and how he was a person who was a choma. He stood and he was Moser Nefesh in so many different stages of his life. I met Chaim the first time in third grade. We're 8 years old. I remember he came in. I was already learning in RJJ for a few years. He came in third grade, and he was immediately the best in the class. He was muchshar, he knew everything. The Rebbe had always put the people, the students in rows. First row was the best, second row was second, third row was third, fourth row was fourth. He was always first row, first seat. He was always the best of the best. Came out always. And he wasn't only always the best, he also knew many things that nobody ever knew. I came from an American family, and I didn't have such mzogim. Chaim's father, he was Talmud Chacham, he learned Aaron and Pless, and he had many different mzogim. He brought me up, he gave me different things. Chaim knew, I think, every single Kol Adol Yisrael by heart. He used to call him the Torah Tamima kid. He knew everything, he knew every single Torah Tamima. He knew Medroshim, he knew things that were totally beyond my scope. And he brought us up, he gave us an idea and a musagim that we really didn't have. And we learned together, I lived in the same building, we were inseparable, we were together, I was half the time in his house, he was half the time in my house. And we did many things together, we did studio together, we learned together, we had fun together. But he showed, even when he was 8, 9, 10 years old, he showed an understanding and a feeling of, he wanted to do things, he wanted to advance. His learning even then was something that was unbelievable. And then, a few years later, he had a very, very good class. We had many big Talmud Chacham there. Elyon Yossi Soloveitchik were in the class, and Shaul Tusky, and Hershey Kaminsky, and these people eventually were all going to be Rosh Hashivas, but Stai Chaim was still at the top of the class. And then, in about ninth grade, so Soloveitchik went to Skokie, and the Altuskis went to Eretz Yisrael. And Hershey Kaminsky went to Mir, and his father said, look, now it's time to leave, you're not in class anymore. And I assume that he knew the Rashivas in Philadelphia. Philadelphia at that time was probably the best yeshiva, probably the best high school yeshiva in America. And he said, it's time to go to Philadelphia. Chaim went to Philadelphia. He went to Rav Mendel Kaplan's shiur in his second year in high school, which is totally unheard of. It never happened before, I don't know if it ever happened since. To go and to jump, to skip two classes, was totally impossible. And everybody used to go to him and say, you know, you're a sophomore and you're a mental seer. How did that happen? But after he came, he was still from the top of the class. It wasn't that he got in with protection and he couldn't manage. He managed very, very well. He considered a mental his Rebbe for many years. And he had a problem, though, because at the second year high school, he had to go to sleep at 10 o'clock. He couldn't stay up very late. All the other bachurim in his year, they were already seniors, they could stay up as late as they wanted to. In Philadelphia, he didn't fool around. 10 o'clock was 10 o'clock, he went to sleep. So Chaim said to Rosh Hashivas, he said, I want to learn, I have to keep up. Everybody else is learning it late. He said, Ein shum baya. If you want to keep learning, just get up early. Get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, Ein shum baya. And I assume they probably felt, you know, he needs to sleep, he's not going to get up so easily. As we all know, it's much easier to stay up late at night than to get up early in the morning. But Chaim is Chaim. And he used to get up at 5 and 4 and 3 o'clock in the morning. He used to meet his chavrusa, who would go to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, he would pass, he would be going to sleep, he would be getting up. And that was the way he did things every day. Since then, I think he's gotten up every just about every day in his life, very, very early. I think that's the beginning of his forsaking, that he was able to get up, he was able to have that mesiras nefesh to get up. It was a very, very difficult thing. Chaim finished Philadelphia, and he went to Lakewood. He was never very, very happy with the learning. He always felt that there was something missing. He felt there was a certain emes in Torah that he just wasn't quite getting. There were yeshivas that were very, very good, but there was something lacking. He had a brother-in-law who learned in a yeshiva called Iona Talmud. Whoever heard of Iona Talmud? Lakewood was a big yeshiva. That was right after Philadelphia. He was already in Lakewood. And his brother said, look, you know, the yeshivas in Far Rockaway, in the summer, they have to leave Far Rockaway. It's right near the beach, and it's not shy to have a yeshiva there. And they go into the mountains during the summer, and you can go there for the summer. In Ben Azmanin, you go for Ben Azmanin in the yeshiva. And Chaim went to the yeshiva, he went to the shir, and he came out the first shir, he called me up, he was totally intoxicated. He said, I never heard a yeshiva like that in my life. He went again and again and again, and he said, this is my place. This is the place that I have to learn. This is the Rebbe that I have. This is what I've been waiting for my whole life. And he came home and he told his father, I'm not staying in Lakewood. I'm going to Rav Abba. And his father said, "B'shum ponim v'oifin lo." I wouldn't hear of it. I was a Talmud of Rav Aaron from Kletsk. What are you going to get from there? Lakewood is the best yeshiva in the world. All the best bochum in the world are learning there. You make connections, you get a shidduch. You'll be able to be a big Rosh Yeshiva. Going to Far Rockaway, whoever heard of such a place, whoever knows such a place. If you want to go to hear a shir once in a while, Vakasha, go once a month to hear a shir. But to go to learn there, b'shum ponim v'oifin lo. And Chaim Bales Brera, he listened to his father. He was very, very close to his father. He was very close to his parents. So he went back to Lakewood. And for a whole time, he was there. And he went once in a while to hear a shir. But he understood that if he really wanted to get a derech in Lakewood from a baba, the only way to do it is to stay there. So he went to Ramosha, and he asked the Shaila what he should do. On the one hand, I really feel that this is the place for me. On the other hand, my father is dead set against it. What should I do? And Ramosha said, that ain't of them lo medel gokum shilu v'chofetz, go to Rababa. But he was afraid to say it to his parents. He left a letter by his sister. And he went to Rababa, he took his stuff, and his father was, he was boiling. He didn't know what to do with himself. And he said, "I'm not going to talk to you again for the rest of your life." And he was very, very close to his parents. And it was something that was very, very, very difficult for Chaim to pick up and do things against his father, but he understood that this is what he has to do if he wants to be advanced, if he wants to advance in learning, if he wants to be the Talmud Chacham, if he wants to have ideas of Torah and Havonas of Torah the way it has to be, then the only way is if he went to Rav Abba and learned. And he brought me also all over also. He went one Mitzvah Shabbos, he went to Borough Park, Erev Shir. It was really, Rav Abba was unbelievable. He was someone who gave over ideas of Torah and Havonas of Torah like nobody in the world. He was the most choshev bocher in the Mir. He was the most choshev Rosh Yeshiva in America. He had a small yeshiva, it's true. But the echos of the yeshiva was unbelievable. And Chaim understood that. And even though most people didn't feel it was necessary to go there, some bocher from Lakewood would go there for his man, they would go there to his man, and was very kubal. But Chaim understood that to be a real Talmud Chacham, to understand, to have Avonos of Torah ad hasof, the only way to do it is to be Meshavish, Godel, and to be there always. That was the only way to do it. And he was matter of everything. His father, eventually, after many, many months, he understood that Chaim didn't do it for any other reason, only because of Avas Torah, and he relented, and he brought him back in, and everything was okay. But Chaim was willing to give up everything, because he understood what Torah was. It wasn't something that was convenient. It wasn't something that was easy. And he was willing to do things that were very, very difficult because he understood what he had to do. He understood what Torah really was. It was a home where he stood like a brick wall, not moving bechlal, because that was what was necessary. Chaim got married and became a dayin, the most choshev but he did in America, in Muncie. And he was given gittin. He was Moshe Nefesh forgetting. He was he did things that nobody else did. He would stretch things ad until the very, very limits of halacha, but he would never go past the halacha. And there was a very big problem with getting in America. It still exists, I guess. And that is that a person who doesn't want to give a get, he doesn't give a get. It's not when you're forcing a person to give a get. In Eretz Yisrael, you don't want to give a get, and you bechuyev to give a get, so you go to jail. And they force you to give a get to a certain extent. Sometimes it's a problem here also, but in America there was nothing to do. Communities were not what they once were. That you can put a person into cheirem and he felt that it was necessary. And so there were many, many agunos around. And the feminists and the women's organizations all said, "Oh, these rabbonim don't care about women. They don't care what happens. They don't care if women are bound by their husbands who don't want to have them anymore. And they just want to have $100,000 and that's all. And let's try to get a bill passed in the government to try to take care of this problem." And somebody had this ingenious idea of making a bill that there was a way to split up the nechosim of a family, of a couple, when they got divorced. And there were 12 different criteria of splitting up the nechosim of a family, and they wanted to make one of the criteria the fact that one of the couples did not allow the other couple to get married. You couldn't say you have a get, there's a separation of church and state in America, and you couldn't say you get a get, but one of the criteria of splitting up the nechosim of the couple was that if one of the couple, if the man or the woman would impede the other person to get married, then that was a reason for the judge to decide that the other side should get more money. And obviously, a person who was under that situation, he realized that it could cost him millions of dollars if he wouldn't give his wife a get. So it would make him understand that it's kedai to give his wife a get. And this is an ingenious idea. Everyone was happy. Rabbi Bonin was happy. Agudas Yisrael was happy. Everybody endorsed the bill. Great, this problem of Agudas is solved, and everybody was jumping for joy. And everyone was happy, except for one person. That was Chaim. Chaim understood that the din of a get ma'usa, a get that's forced on a person by a non-Jewish court, even if it's la'halocha, even if he's mechuyev to give a get la'halocha, the get is possible. And I really don't want to get into the halachas of get ma'usa. It's very, very complicated. I want to be motzi laz on the gittin in New York. But Chaim felt it was a terrible, terrible problem. It would be a problem not only for a person who didn't want to give a get, but it was a problem for every single get that was given in New York, because every lawyer would tell his client that if you don't give a get, you're liable to lose who knows how much money. And it's not kedai not to do it. And then all of a sudden, everything becomes a get ma'usa, becomes a get that's forced by a non-Jewish court, whether it's halacha or not halacha, whether the person has to give the get or doesn't have to give the get. And Chaim started to scream. He said, you can't do such a thing. It's impossible. And everyone said, why not? It's such a great idea, and everybody's happy, and what are you starting trouble for? Why is it necessary? And Chaim called me up. He said, what am I going to do? It's impossible. He'd have to come to Eretz Yisrael, go to Rosh Hashanah, go to Rabbi Yoshe, get letters. So he came to Eretz Yisrael, he went to Rosh Hashanah, he went to Rabbi Yoshe, and he explained the whole thing. And they said, he's right. How can you have such a bill? It's impossible. How can Agudas Yisrael possibly support such a thing? How can the Rabbonim support such a thing? We have to stop it. He went to every single dayan, wrote letters to every dayan in the country. And he brought letters back to America, and all of a sudden the tide started to turn. And Aguda understood that they made a mistake and reversed their opinion, and they reversed their endorsement of the bill. And the Rabbonim started to say it was a terrible thing. It was too late. The bill had already passed the assembly, and the bill became a law. But Chaim didn't spare any effort or any exertion to try to stop the bill. I think recently, and after the bill is passed, they tried to do something in order to overturn the law, that it may be a steer between church and state. And I think recently it was overturned. I'm not sure exactly what happened. They didn't follow it afterwards. But Chaim was willing to do everything. He didn't budge. He was like a wall. In Chomani, if I'm a wall, then Bivler Tiras Kesef. If I'm a wall, if a person is a wall, if he doesn't give in for anything, and it doesn't make any difference if it's difficult, it doesn't make any difference how he has to go against everybody else in the world, it didn't make any difference to Chaim, because he knew what the emes was. He knew where he had to be, and he knew where he had to go. And the fact that it was difficult, the fact that he had to disagree with everybody in the world, was just insignificant. It made no difference to him at all. The next story I really didn't know firsthand, but I heard from different people. He was in a bungalow colony, and Chaim was giving shiurim, he was learning, and somebody there saw someone who had an unbelievable tfisa, had an unbelievable speed. He understood, and he realized, and he was at a clarity, and a way to give over things, and a way to understand, and he was amazed by the person. That person happened to be her first Goldworm. And he called up, that was also the chief editor of Art Scroll. He told Art Scroll, look, you know, you have to take this guy. This guy is unbelievable. And they said, who is he? You know, whoever heard of him? Muncie, based in, what do we need it for? He said, try him out. They sent him a few pages of Art Scroll. In an hour, they got it back with 50 hours. They were totally blown away. They couldn't believe a person could work that quickly and so accurately and so efficiently. It was impossible. And very, very soon, he became the chief editor of the Gemara Art Scroll series, the Shatnesline series. Im Chomahu Nasol of Tira Shel Kesef. We'll make a Tira Shel Kesef. And he got a Parnosa finally. It was very difficult before then, but Art Scroll gave him a Parnosa. Gave him a good Parnosa. Gave him a possibility to do many different things that he was unable to do until then. And what does a normal person do when he has a Parnosa and he's a Dayan and he's a Rosh Koyul? And he has a shul, and he has a vasikin minion. In the middle of Monsieur HaKadosh, what more could one possibly ask for? And he decided, no, this is not what I want. I want to live Eretz Yisrael. He understood that Monsieur HaKadosh is not Yerushalayim HaKadosh. And he understood that even though he had everything going for him in Monsi, and he had COVID, and he had Parnosa, and he had everything that anyone could possibly want, He still felt that he has to do more. He has to go to Eretz Yisrael because building Torah in America and building Torah in Eretz Yisrael is not the same. And he wanted to take part in the building of Torah in Eretz Yisrael that was not possible in America. And so he picked his whole family up. And he had Sadat Ishmael and Ishis Chayil, who not only agreed to everything he did, she stood by his side, and she was moldeed him in everything he did. And wherever he went, she was always by his side. She was always helping him and doing. She was his right hand in everything he ever did. She not only didn't she protest, she adorah, she was moldeed him to come. And his whole family came. I remember when they came, he was very, very close to his family in America, but after he understood that this is what one had to do. And so if it had to be done, it didn't make any difference how difficult it was. It had to be done. This is the emes, this is the Torah, chomani, nibin al atiris of kesef. As soon as he had the possibility of moving over, he moved over. And it must have been very, very difficult for his family. Everyone here knows how difficult Aliyah is, but it made no difference because that was what had to be done. But he didn't want to only come here to Eretz Yisrael in order to sit and do art school. He wanted to give over. He wanted to be mechanic people. And what did he do? To be Rosh Yeshiva in Ponovich was pretty much out of the picture. And Chevron was also out of the picture. He felt what he could do was he could say a shir in a Baal Tshuva yeshiva. He went to Or Sameach, and I think they were afraid of him, and they rejected him. He went to Eishat Torah. And Eishat Torah, they're more open to different ideas, and they looked at him. He was somebody who they just couldn't exactly put into any box. They didn't really know who was how to feed him. He had an art scroll there with this person who was a genius, and he had all these talents. And Rabbi Berkowitz called me up and he said, "You know, do you think he can do it? You know, he's obviously an extremely talented person, but do you think he can relate to Baalei Tshuva?" And I told him. I said, you know, I don't know. One thing I know is that he has willpower that I don't know anybody in the world who has such willpower. And if Chaim wants to do something and he feels it's necessary, he'll make sure it's done. It's not something that Chaim doesn't take on things that are easy, that are within his possibilities. There's a pasuk in the Torah, the Torah was about Shamayim, you have to go up to the sky and take it down and learn it. That was what Chaim was. If something was difficult, he would do it anyway. If something was impossible, he made it possible. For Chaim to teach Baalei Tshuva was something that was, I think it was in the realm of impossibility. He was so far ahead of everybody, of people who learned their whole lives. He was so far ahead of people who was steeped in Torah. To go down and to teach Baalei Tshuva was really an impossibility. But he was able to do it because he was emes, and when people saw emes and they understood it, he was willing to go down and teach and do. And I think that everybody who was in Eishat Torah at that time understood who Chaim was, he understood what Torah was. They got an understanding of where they were going and what they were doing. And I think he was ma'ala all of his talmidim from the beginning to the end. A little few years after that, I was teaching in a yeshiva in Rehovot. They had a yeshiva for Americans. There was somebody there with Binyamin Kualwasser. He came to me and he said, you know, we have this kehillah in Beit Shemesh, and it's a kehillah of Bnei Torah. We have people there who are big talmid chachamim, and we can really do things with this kehillah. It's something that can be a very great thing, a great leader of Klal Yisrael. But we need a rav. We need someone who can lead, someone who's above everyone, someone who people will look up to, people will understand, people will see the greatness of Torah, and he'll be so far above everyone that nobody will be able to open up his mouth and then disagree. Disagree they will, but b'chol ofen, he'll be able to realize, they'll see in him the greatness of Torah. Do you know anybody like that? So I said, I know of only one person in the world, and that's Chaim Zemelinowitz. So he said, look, he was already, they already told us about him, but he said no. He said he's not going to do it. So I said, you know what, if you want, I can speak to him. And he said, good. Go speak to him. So I went to Chaim and I said, look, there's a kid in Beit Shemesh. He said, yeah, I know, they asked me already. I said, look, they need somebody who's not a standard person. They need somebody who's great. They need somebody who knows Kalat Torah Kula. They need somebody who's a Boki B'Shas. and somebody who can teach them, and somebody who can give over Torah the way it really is supposed to be given over, with Havana and Hasmoda, and show a person what a true Ben Torah is, and bring people up to what they're really supposed to be. And the only person in Eretz Yisrael who can do it is you. So he said, I can't do it. I'm not fit to teach Balabatim and to be in the ladies' league. And I don't know, Rechaim, you're a day, Kamosh, I can't pass in. So I told him, Chaim, you know what? It's right. He said, I'm not a shtadi dresser. I don't, to be a Rav, you have to wear a hamburg and a frat. Chaim was not a shtadi dresser. I will admit to that. And theoretically, he really shouldn't have been a Rav. There were many things that were lacking in him that Tata, that's not what a Rav is. He was very blunt, very straight. He would tell the person exactly what it was, exactly how it was. He argued and fought so many times, so many days and weeks and months in yeshiva. And I told him, Chaim, listen, you know, I understand you're not a study dresser. I'm sure you're not. I'm sure you're not going to be either. Or Chaim, you're a day, you don't know. I promise you, I'll be at your side. Any shayla you have, you can call up. He knew your Chaim Yudeh better than I did. I'll tell you right now. But he never moved. Your Chaim Yudeh was asking me. I went to build the sukkahs with him because he didn't feel, he knew it better than I did, but he didn't feel that he knew it ad kidei kach, that he could just say and pass it and do, and he was always so much on what I said. And I said, L'gabei, speaking to Balabatim, you can do it, because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And if this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, then anything is possible. And he looked at me and he said, you know what? If you stand by me, I'll do it. And he came to Rav Beit Shemesh, and I think he opened up different parts of his personality that just didn't exist before. And how was he able to do it? Because ani choma, I'm a person, what's driving, the driving force in my life is not the convenience, it's not things that I can do. I do things, I go above and beyond what I can possibly do. I go b'shamayim, im lo ben b'shamayim hi. So tzarech lalo zacher alone, if the Torah is in the sky, you have to start jumping. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent siyata d'shmaya. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him siyata d'shmaya. And he was able to relate to people. He was able to come and open up. And I heard stories in Beit Shemesh that he was able to relate to people in a way that very, very rarely people are able to relate to people. Chaim was a very, very great personality. He was my friend. He was my best friend. I mean, this is very, very much. He was my friend, he was my mentor, he was my Rebbe, he was my leader. He showed me what Torah was. He showed me what being a really great Shabbayim was. He showed me that a person can go beyond himself and be something much, much greater. He can change his personality. He can go beyond what his capabilities are and do much, much more. Sar li olecha ochi, not to be bold. I loved Chaim. Same place next to you in Gan Eden, in your table. I should be told to sit in the mechitza. You should be able to learn Yeshiva Bishul Malo. You made it Yosher. You were just Chaim. Your children, you loved and appreciated. For your kehillah, for your friends, for your relatives. Ubilam Bobasul Netzach, Moch Hashem, Alokim Dim, and Hokam.